Hello, everyone. Welcome to Season 3 of Public Health Out Loud, Public Health for the Public. I'm Dr. Philip Chan at the Rhode Island Department of Health, and I'm so excited to be back for our new season. I'm sad to be solo without Dr. McDonald, but hopefully we'll get to see him at some point this season. We've got a lot to cover, and our guests today are experts in STIs, so let's jump right into it. Here today, we have Dr. Kathy Hsu and Kathleen Roosevelt from the Massachusetts Department of Health. They're our neighbors right up to the north, and we're excited to have them. Thank you both so much for joining us. They're going to be talking with us about gonorrhea, what it is, how to test for it, how to treat it, and some interesting developments happening in their state. And so as we start here, Kathleen, Dr. Hsu, welcome so much. Why don't we start with a round of introductions? Kathleen, please introduce yourself and tell us what you do.
Thank you. I'm Kathleen Roosevelt. I am the Director of STD Prevention and HIV Surveillance in Massachusetts.
And I'm Dr. Kathy Hsu, the medical director for the same division that Kathleen Roosevelt is in charge of.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again. We're talking today about gonorrhea and specifically some cases up in Massachusetts that are showing some resistance against antibiotics. But before we get into that, tell us first, Dr. Hsu, perhaps, what is gonorrhea?
It's one of what we classify as the bacterial STDs or STIs, sexually transmitted infections. We classify the universe of sexually transmitted infections by the different types of pathogens that can cause the infection or the disease. And this one is in the group of bacterial STDs. There are a number of things that happen related to this when you catch gonorrhea. And I'll pass it over to Kathleen to mention a few of the concerns we have.
And Kathleen, maybe you can also let us know, what are the symptoms of gonorrhea? How does it usually present? Let our listeners know about that.
So one of the main symptoms of gonorrhea that many individuals might think about is pain during urination. So clinicians might call this dysuria. The rest of us know this as uncomfortable or pain when peeing. That is actually the way that many people might present, but you might not know this, gonorrhea can sometimes not have any symptoms at all, which is why it's an important thing to keep getting tested if you're sexually active for all STIs, including gonorrhea.
Dr. Hsu, why don't you put this in perspective for us? I know that there's a lot of STIs out there. I mean, how common is gonorrhea and how does it compare to some of these other STIs?
Getting back to the way that we think about the different pathogens, and the different ways that we track and measure it on a population level, what many health departments and local health jurisdictions and the CDC do is they tend to look at the bacterial STIs primarily, syphilis, gonorrhea, chlamydia. Those are the three main notifiable infections, and they've all been on the rise. They've all been on track to increase over time. And gonorrhea is sort of the middle of the pack. However, because of some of the things that Kathleen was mentioning, you could be asymptomatic. You might have pain with urination, or you might have a glaring sore throat, or it may hurt to poop. There are a lot of different reasons you could come to attention for gonorrhea, and we are noticing that there is more and more gonorrhea coming to attention, both for doctors and nurses to take care of, but also for health departments to monitor.
And I think one thing, Dr. Hsu, that you're touching on as well is the extra genital nature of gonorrhea at times. You know, we've learned more about this over the years, but we know that if you, for example, perform oral sex or have receptive anal sex or bottom, that you can also get things like gonorrhea or chlamydia, or frankly, even syphilis in those sites that may not be detectable when you, for example, provide a urine specimen in a cup, which generally checks for gonorrhea or chlamydia in the genital region. So that's good to know and for folks to keep in mind. And Kathleen, Dr. Hsu touched on this, but gonorrhea, as Dr. Hsu mentioned, is reportable to state health departments. What exactly does that mean? And what do you do with that information?
Thanks so much. Yes. So what it means is that when laboratories and clinicians test for gonorrhea and the test comes back positive, they are required to notify us in the health department of those positive test results. What we get are just some simple demographic information and whether that test was positive. What we do with that information is we monitor the rates of gonorrhea, syphilis, chlamydia, for example, in Massachusetts. And what we've seen is that gonorrhea rates in Massachusetts have been increasing for quite a while now. We saw the biggest jump in rates before the pandemic between 2016 and 2017, when there was over a 40% increase in cases in Massachusetts in a single year. In 2021, there were about 8,000 cases reported in Massachusetts, and the trend in Massachusetts is not unique. It's happening all over New England and all across the country.
Yeah, and we're also seeing that here, Kathleen, in Rhode Island. Thank you for that. We've seen a marked increase in gonorrhea over the last 10 years, which is why we're covering this in our topic today. Kathleen, talk to us briefly about how gonorrhea is treated and whether or not it's easily treated in general or it can be more difficult.
It's treated generally in uncomplicated cases with a shot of ceftriaxone. That is one reason we're talking today, because the cases that we have discovered in Massachusetts displayed what is called reduced susceptibility to that treatment. And that is the CDC reportable treatment for gonorrhea.
So Dr. Hsu, let me ask you this as an infectious disease doc. Kathleen just mentioned how gonorrhea is typically treated with the shot of ceftriaxone. And I'll say that a lot of clinics have this on hand. But we've also been hearing, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in a second, about resistant gonorrhea. What exactly does that mean? And why is that concerning to you as an infectious diseases physician?
Well, as you know, Dr. Chan, a lot of these pathogens that we talk about that can cause infection, silent or otherwise, or disease, are treatable, particularly in the bacterial world, by antibiotics. And every pathogen can eventually, to greater or lesser degrees, have the capability of evolving resistance to drugs used to treat. The gonococcus is particularly wily. It has the ability, especially when it coexists with other bacteria on the surfaces of people's bodies, we believe, to trade resistance determinants with other bacteria, for example, in the backs of people's throats or in the rectal area. Those are some of the two places that we're aware of. We're probably going to become aware of many other ways that it can evolve resistance. The two cases in Massachusetts that are particular concern, we want to emphasize to the public, absolutely, the patients responded. Oh, it was so amazing. To that single shot of ceftriaxone that was given to them, that was used to treat. But in one of those cases, we were able to identify growth of the organism. We were able to send the bacteria from the originating lab that collaborated to us, to us at the state lab, all the way to the CDC. And in this enormous collaboration, which went really smoothly, we were able to put this organism on a plate and compete it against the antibiotics that are typically used to treat it. And here's the truth of the matter. This is the most non-susceptible or resistant strain that the US has ever seen. This is the first one to have five classes of antibiotics with clear either non-susceptibility, which is a grade of resistance that isn't complete resistance, or total resistance against drugs typically used to treat gonorrhea. However, the non-susceptibility of the ceftriaxone was to the level where the patients still responded to the ceftriaxone given as the normal dose that a frontline primary care clinician would deliver. It was primary care who took care of these patients. They knew what to do. They had already long since figured it out because the plate is not the patient. The plate, what grows out, isn't what's going on in the patient's body. It was great. The patients were well, but we did find out that it was a particular resistant form of the organism.
So let me ask you this, Dr. Hsu. Let me put you on the spot for a second. So this third generation ceftriaxone, cephalosporin. So when I think about antibiotics, right, you have kind of a penicillin, right, which is kind of like the basic level penicillin. Everyone's heard of penicillin. You then have amoxicillin. You then have some additional generation, you know, souped up penicillins. And then you have a related sort of cousins, right? Classes, cephalosporins, which are even more bigger guns, if you will, against bacteria. And ceftriaxone that we use to treat gonorrhea is a third generation. So it's more advanced than some other classes of cephalosporins. If we were to lose this third generation cephalosporin against gonorrhea, I mean, what is the next step, right? Isn't that, that's why we're talking about this, because if we lose that third generation ceftriaxone, what do we do next? Are there other treatment options, or how complicated does it get?
It starts to get more complicated. And this is one of the keys. It's important to use the plates to give us some hints as to what the organism that a particular patient is growing could potentially be susceptible to. So people are now getting really, really creative. So for example, maybe it doesn't respond to a single dose of ceftriaxone, but what about ceftriaxone given over time? That's one of the easier things. Or a higher dose of ceftriaxone. Certainly, as you know, Dr. Chan, in other countries of the world, some of them have migrated to an even higher dose given as routine to every frontline patient that has gonorrhea. There are also other alternatives. Not only are there alternatives that are typically given in hospitals, drugs like ertapenem, but there are even more alternatives that we hope are being developed by companies that are still not ready for full release yet. So new drugs will be invented. And there are older drugs. So what we don't know with any given particular bacterium that's flourishing in a particular patient, if it's possible, if that particular set or strain can actually go backwards and potentially be responsive to something that we used to treat gonorrhea, but maybe we don't typically anymore. We would know that from a culture, somewhat slowly, but we would eventually find out that information and have some other tools. So I think that we have options, and I absolutely do not want the public to panic about this.
Kathleen, Dr. Hsu mentioned that this was perhaps one of the most resistant strains of gonorrhea that's been observed, cultured here in the United States of America. Now, I know across the world, Southeast Asia, some other countries, we have seen fully resistant ceftriaxone, but can you put this into perspective for us a little bit more? I mean, how big of a deal is this? How concerned are you personally?
Sure, thank you. Well, so we're looking at this as a warning. This is the first time that this strain of non-susceptible gonorrhea or gonorrhea with reduced susceptibility has been identified in the United States. This same non-susceptible strain of gonorrhea has also been identified and reported in the United Kingdom recently and was previously reported in Asia Pacific countries. And after the first patient was identified in Massachusetts through culture, we at the health department actually worked with a few local health centers and laboratories and the CDC to scale up surveillance in a really limited and targeted fashion, which was actually how the second case was identified. And then upon discovery of that case, that's when we increased the warning and we issued our clinical alert here in Massachusetts. And at the same time, the CDC circulated a Dear Colleague letter. And what we wanted to do with that is really say, this is a warning. This is a warning that gonorrhea is potentially developing resistance to antibiotics and is happening right here in Massachusetts in New England. And so we need to look for it. And then we've asked then clinicians to help us look for it by enhancing surveillance.
Thank you for that, Kathleen. And I just want to go back to something too that Dr. Hsu mentioned, which is that people shouldn't panic. And obviously I agree with that. I mean, we are seeing, you know, I think in Rhode Island, we had a little bit over 1,000 cases last year. So we're definitely seeing gonorrhea here in the state of Rhode Island. And that's, I think, the tip of the iceberg. Those are people that have been tested and diagnosed, but of course, we're missing a number of other cases there. But let me ask you both this. I mean, with that in mind, what should the general person in Massachusetts, in Rhode Island know about? I mean, should they run off and get tested? What would you tell the average person listening? Dr. Hsu, maybe you can start, and Kathleen, anything to add on there?
We've tried to reinforce in the clinical alert and in our conversations with the public that they should continue to do what they've always done, which is that routine screening is actually advised for anyone younger than the age of 26 by the United States Preventive Services Task Force and other bodies, such as the Centers for Disease Control. So routine screening is usually done through a nucleic acid amplification test. And we definitely want to have people come in at least annually for that, if not more often. Some patients who realize that they may be concerned that they may be working in a sexual network or they may be participating in a sexual network where they may be at higher risk for acquisition of sexually transmissible infections. Some of them get screened every 3 months. Perfectly fine to do that. And of course, we don't want people to hesitate. If you're in pain, if you have a sore throat, if you have trouble stooling and you potentially need to get checked, please come in and get a diagnostic that may or may not include things like sexually transmitted infections. Try to be open with your clinicians to guide them that maybe an STD could be the cause of what's your symptom that you're showing up in the office today. Be clear about your worries, because that helps doctors and nurses take care of you better on the front lines.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thanks so much, Dr. Hsu. And so I would just add that what we've been saying to individuals who've called us with concern is that sexually active people should consider increasing their protection against acquiring gonorrhea and other sexually transmitted infections by getting regularly tested or screened, as Dr. Hsu said, and reducing potentially their number of sexual partners and using condoms when having sex. So individuals, if they know they've had an exposure to gonorrhea, should also go and seek treatment and testing right away.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. I think that those are all great tips. Ending here, are there, Dr. Hsu, I'll throw this last one out to you. I mean, is there anything else we can do, either the average person here or the clinicians, public health departments can do to address potential gonorrhea resistance, whether it be in Massachusetts or Rhode Island?
Having done this together with you, together with many other people in the New England clinician community, those of us in public health, the patients on the front lines that I still take care of over at Boston Medical Center, where I'm there sometimes. I think, you know, two decades into doing this, what I reflect on the most is how sometimes difficult the area of STDs in general is, right? Because more so than maybe a respiratory pathogen like COVID, it can be hard to talk about the fact that you had herpes, you had gonorrhea. Yet how common these infections are is kind of mind-boggling, particularly herpes and some of the viral pathogens we didn't touch on today. So I sort of reflect on that and think about how hard it can be to come forward as a patient and say to your doctor, please, you know, I'm thinking about this, I'm anxious about this. And then people are worried about, you know, being judged, right, in the office, because the clinician-patient dynamic is a power dynamic at the end of the day. And I hope that anybody who hears this today sort of feels the openness from those of us in public health, those of us doing this clinical medicine for a long time, and understand that we ourselves also grapple with these messages, that we're not perfect either. We might muff up, and try to understand that we were always trained never to judge. That was our job in life. It was to take care of health, right? In this really super passionate way, to take care of sexual health for me in particular, that wound up being my specialty. And I just sort of think, Bill, gosh, it's tough on people to get into care sometimes. But I really hope that when they come into care, that New England clinicians greet them with open arms, seriously, and say, I'm so glad you came in. Let's get some testing done. Let's get some treatment. How amazing would that be?
Amazing indeed. That is what we strive for. So with that, I want to thank you both so much for joining us. The time has certainly flown by. Thank you both so very much for taking the time to share your wisdom and experience with us here in Rhode Island. I would like to close with just some specific Rhode Island resources for those in our state listening. I want to remind people that the Rhode Island Department of Health has an STI information prevention testing and treatment website available at health.ri.gov/STI. Please do check that out. There's some specific resources. The CDC website also has a lot of great resources there. For providers, if you have any suspected cases of gonorrhea resistant, please do call us at the Department of Health at 222-2577. We have some resources to help facilitate gonorrhea resistance testing if needed. Also letting folks know that we have an app here at the Rhode Island Department of Health called the Right Time app, which provides folks with some timely sexual health resources. You can download it on the App Store or the Google Play Store. We also have a condom by mail program to prevent the spread of HIV and STIs, as Dr. Hsu mentioned. So check that out as well. And finally, we also have a website where people can sign up for online testing called testing123ri.com. That's an online resources for STI screening as well. But in closing, I do want to remember everyone to check in with your primary care provider or another clinician about any questions related to sexual health. There's a number of clinics here in state of Rhode Island that really specialize in sexual health, and you can have confidential private conversations about that, because as Dr. Hsu mentioned, it really can be sensitive at times. And of course, you can always reach out to us at the Rhode Island Department of Health with any questions. Thank you all, and be well.